Our show's name pays tribute to the Boer Trekkers of South Africa, who in 1838 soundly defeated 30,000 Zulus on the bank of the Nkomo River, thereafter called Blood River, from the water turning red with the blood of the slain. Miraculously, no Boer Trekker died and only three were wounded. Now, your friend, Eddie Miller, will be your ambassador for tonight's show.
Well, people, thank you so much for holding on. We sure love all you people out there tuning in and listening to us. Without y'all being there, there'd be no reason for us to be here. I mean, that goes without saying. But tonight, people, I hope you enjoyed the first hour. We might have been a little off our game tonight. I'm still just a little bit jittery from the crap I had to go through the last 2 weeks, you know, being in and out of the cardiac unit. Sam's ailing too. Sam's sick. But we got it going, Mal. People, in case you didn't tune in earlier, we have three people on coming up tonight on the second hour. We have our dear brother, Gene Andrews. He's our right-hand man co-host. He's going to drive this interview with Mr. Tom Goodrich. Mr. Tom Goodrich is one of my favorite authors in the world. He wrote the book, in case you didn't tune in the first hour, Hellstorm. He is an expert on the battle of the bombing of Dresden, Germany, in the anniversary, I believe, is going to be the 13th of February. You know, 13th of February, 1945, the satanic, the allies, so-called allies who were under the power of Satan, they just out and out murdered the people in Dresden, Germany. That's all I'm going to say about that. Tom Goodrich wrote the novel. Later on in the hour, probably this guy named Paul English is going to call in. He is a compadre of Tom Goodrich. Paul English has done an audio book on Hellstorm. So if you might want to get, well, ask Tom how he can go about getting that book later on. I'd like to have one myself. But anyway, welcome to the show, Tom. How are you doing tonight, fella?
Hi, Eddie. I'm doing okay. Probably better than you. So that you've had a little sickness.
Well, I'll tell you what. I'm a tough old bird, man. I still haven't stopped my running, you know. I'm going to keep going until I fall over. I think we're going to get straightened out. I think the whole problem, coming from an old registered nurse combat medic, I think it's because I have a chronic low serum potassium linked to this growth on my left kidney. We're going to get this straightened out. But, you know, the guy who's going to drive the interview tonight, Tom, is my right-hand man, my brother. I rode to Charlottesville with, I call him Mr. Marine Jeans. I love the guy to death. He's a hardcore Marine. His name is Gene Andrews. He's a history buff, probably a history expert. He's taught history in high school. He knows a hell of a lot more about that than I do. That's why I'm letting him drive this interview or ask him. He did me a favor. I'm not letting him. I begged him to do it, and he agreed to get me out of the, to pull me out of this ditch. He's going to do this interview. So I'm going to introduce you now, Tom, to Mr. Marine Jeans himself, Gene Andrews, the Vietnam Semper Fi Marine. Say hello to Tom, Gene.
Eddie, thank you very much. I appreciate that. And Mr. Goodrich, this is an honor to get to speak with you. I've been a fan of yours and read many of your articles in the Barnes Review, and I've read Hellstorm. And just to get a chance to talk to you and hear you tell us about your book and some of the other articles you've written, I think it's a real treat for the listeners tonight. And so I'm going to turn it back to you and let you start wherever you want to and tell us about some of the work that you've done.
Well, Gene, thanks. It's my pleasure speaking with you. Thank you for the nice, kind things you say about me in the introduction. Yes, I've been writing for the Barnes Review, the TBR as it's known, the last best great magazine in America, if you ask me. It's a politically incorrect magazine that six times a year comes out, and it's just full of tremendous articles you'll never find in your college campuses and the history books in the libraries, any place but this TBR. But thank you for mentioning that. I guess the topic tonight is, unfortunately, it's Dresden, one of the most terrible disasters ever in world history. You know, World War II was a terrible time, filled with all sorts of atrocities. And I'm not talking about the side that we blame the Germans and the Italians for and the Japanese. I'm talking about the crimes that were committed by the Allies, the Americans, the British, the Australians. No doubt, in my mind at least, I should say this too as a prequel. I really don't consider myself an expert on World War II or even Dresden. I did write about it. Of course, I have it in my books, some of my books, but there are people probably listening tonight that know even more than I do about Dresden. But I want to say this, that in a war filled with atrocities, committed by and large by the Allies, I can probably say with absolute certitude that the two worst atrocities were the atomic bombing of Japan at the end of the war and the incineration of Dresden also at the end of the war. Two of the greatest atrocities ever committed in world history, period. These both occurred, of course, in World War II. And they both occurred, interestingly enough, at the end of the war, both of them. And, of course, we all know that the Allies by that time had already figured out they're going to win this war. So what they do and the crimes they commit will not be punished in a so-called Nuremberg type of setup. They're going to get out of this war completely scot-free. There's not going to be any insinuations and any finger-pointing at them. They won the war, and they can do damn well what they please, and they did. I won't talk about Nagasaki and Hiroshima in Japan, but a lot of your listeners, I'm sure, have read enough to know that these were totally unnecessary, totally unneeded. They were just simply a way of stacking up more bodies and also of proving if the machine, that is the atomic bombs, actually work. These devilish bombs I won't go on about that, except that they kill in many more ways than one. But in Germany, Dresden, that's where the other great atrocity in World War II occurred. And this was also totally unnecessary. It was just a way of killing more Germans, and mostly women and children, of course, and old people, and many, many refugees, people who were absolutely vulnerable and had no escape whatsoever. And it was planned. It was planned that way at Yalta, of course, with Stalin insisting on this. But it was something the Allies did happily, gleefully, and actually enjoyed doing what they were doing. I'm not talking about the bombardiers and the planes and the people that are flying the planes and those who are told to do this, although they have their share of guilt. There's no doubt about it. And they even admit this after the war. I'm talking about the overseers, the ones who are directing this. And I'm not just talking about Churchill. I'm talking about the Jewish advisors in both the United States and in Europe that are orchestrating this entire abomination of world history, this terrible mass slaughter, massacre. But rather than me tell the entire story Dresden, excuse me, there's so many atrocities, I stumbled to remember which one it is.
Can't tell the players without a program. That's right.
Yes. Let me say this, though. It's something that most people don't know. They think of Dresden as some sort of anomaly, something that occurred out of the norm. Not so. This deliberate firebombing of German cities occurred well before Dresden. As somebody mentioned in the program or in the hour just before me, I was listening, they mentioned Hamburg. Yes, that was the first attempt to literally burn to the ground a German city filled with women and children, mostly, and old people, because all the young men are off fighting on the Eastern Front or at home or with Italians down in Italy or in North Africa.
Tom, we got to take a quick break.
We got commercial coming up.
Yeah, we got a commercial. Tom, thank you so much for coming on our show. We'll be right back, people. This is the riveting interview. We'll go right back to Tom when we come back, and I'm sure Gene will have plenty of questions for him. Hang on to your seats, folks. We'll be right back.
You know where the solution can be found, Mr. President? In churches, in wedding chapels, in maternity wards across the country and around the world. More babies will mean forward-looking adults, the sort we need to tackle long-term, large-scale problems. American babies in particular are likely going to be wealthier, better educated, and more conservation-minded than children raised in still industrializing countries. As economist Tyler Cowen recently wrote, quote, "By having more children, you're making your nation more populous, thus boosting its capacity to solve climate change. The planet does not need for us to think globally and act locally so much as it needs us to think family and act personally. The solution to so many of our problems, at all times and in all places, is to fall in love, get married, and have some kids."
Getting the kids to school, cleaning the house, doing the laundry. It seems that the work routine as a stay-at-home mom is never ending. And even though I'm the prime grocery shopper in our family of four, I simply don't have time to scrutinize all the labels on the countless food products I buy. Oh, sure, I've noticed all the latest certification seals. Organic, non-GMO, gluten-free. It definitely seems to be the latest craze. But it was only recently that kosher certification seals caught my attention. You see, my husband had me download an app called Kosher-tify, and it shed light on a century-old certification industry that slipped under the radar screen from the majority of our public. I also noticed a question mark at the end of the app name, and that makes great sense, as there's far more questions regarding this industry than answers. In fact, the developers refer to this as the kosher question. Sure, I'm a busy mom and didn't pay attention to our food culture, but now I have transparency, a convenient grocery list feature, and the ability to eat in favor of my family's best interests, and you can discover it too at thekosherquestion.com.
Have we realized the assault against our lives, our liberties, our faith? To defeat this assault, Christians and all people of goodwill should have strategies to prevail in our faith and principles, which are simple. No need for a complex formula. One goal, one aim. A strategy like the heroic Christians of the past. We win. They lose. Nothing less. Big Q, Little Q. The Calm Before the Storm. By a friend of Medjugorje. The strategy of heaven revealed. Big Q, Little Q. The Calm Before the Storm. Available on Amazon.com or by calling Caritas in the U.S. at 205-672-2000.
Okay, people, we're right back. We're going to go right back to our guest, and I'm Tom Goodrich. And after Tom Goodrich is through, I'm sure Gene will have, he's our co-host running this show tonight. I'm just going to mention one thing to Gene and Tom. You know, you mentioned this, these people wanting to destroy Germany and Japan and to commit all these atrocities. You know, there was a book written, I'm sure y'all will remember it. I never read it. It's called Germany Must Perish. I don't know who wrote that, but this guy named Henry Morgenthau, I was telling Sam, I don't know what position he held. I wanted to say Secretary of the Treasury, Secretary of the State. But Henry Morgenthau, the big, huge right-hand man of FDR, of course, he was, you know, a Jewish. He was all in this this movement to try to totally, he said that Japan and Germany, especially Germany, he said Germany needs to be just, those people need to be exterminated. And I'm going to shut up with that and go right back to you, Tom.
Well, yes, you're absolutely right about Morgenthau. He was Secretary of Treasury under FDR, and he and a few other Jewish so-called advisors, of course, were always there hoping for to harm Germany the most, however that may be, whichever way, and FDR was happy to oblige, by the way. But back to the firebombing, the deliberate attempt to destroy everybody, every man, woman, and child in Germany, literally. It began in the summer of 1943 with the bombing of Hamburg, and this set the pattern for what was to follow all the way up to Dresden. And that was, since there were no more really good military targets in Germany, or industrial targets for that matter, because the RAF and the U.S. 8th Air Force had already destroyed virtually everything. And at this time, industry is going underground and people are simply living in the rubble. Then they decided, well, let's turn our attention to the people themselves. Let's kill as many of these Germans as we possibly can. There was never any idea about breaking the morale of Germans. They knew far well, far better than that they weren't going to do that. But let's just kill as many as we possibly can while we still have a war going. And so in Hamburg, this entire firebombing pattern began one night in summer of 1943 when the RAF flew in with hundreds of bombers. And by the way, Hamburg had hardly been touched prior to this, as far as the bombing raids, hardly been touched. And so the people were actually caught off guard because they just felt like they were immune, you might say, to bombing for various reasons I won't get into. But they weren't, as they found that night, and the British RAF dropped high explosives and just literally destroyed the entire city in this one bombing raid. Hundreds of bombs, thousands of bombs, excuse me, the high explosives came raining down, destroyed one of the most beautiful cities on Earth, quite honestly. That was terrible enough, but what came later, about 2 hours later, when the people started crawling out of the ruins and trying to find ways to escape and trying to find loved ones, another bombing raid occurred. And this one, as I mentioned, a couple of hours later, when they caught most of the people outside of their shelters, was an incendiary raid. Nothing but firebombs, tens of thousands of firebombs, small things that floated to Earth. And once they came in contact with something, they set it on fire. And what you have here is a huge pile of kindling, so to speak, that is the destroyed city of Hamburg, being consumed by the bombs, the inflammatory bombs that came down and ignited everything. And you have a terrific loss of life, of course, people burning, dying in their cellars, they're roasting to death. You can well imagine what happened there when an entire fire sweeps over this ruined city. In that raid, there was something like, I think, 30 or 40,000 people who died. Now, that's terrible enough. And as I said, most of these are women and children and old people, not young fighting men. And there's not much to destroy in the way of industrial capacity. And so it's just simply a simple attempt to kill as many people as possible. Well, this continued. This continued in virtually every German city of any size, and even down to some smaller cities, by the way. We're talking Berlin, we're talking Munich, we're talking Stuttgart, we're talking Mannheim, we're talking every German city until finally in February 13th and 14th of 1945, they set their goal on Dresden, because Dresden, like Hamburg earlier, had not been touched by the war. A couple of small bombing raids had struck Dresden, but nothing significant. The people actually did consider themselves blessed, you might say, that they had not been attacked by the Allies. And in this late stage of the war, they imagined they would never be attacked by the Allies for whatever reason. But they found out differently, of course. And around midnight, February 13th, the first wave of British and American bombers came in. And just like at Hamburg, they blew it to smithereens. Now, I'm getting the names mixed up, but Dresden, on this day, February 13th, it was a city of roughly 600,000 people. That's a pretty large town. And it was also considered one of the most beautiful cities on the planet. People compared it to some of the beautiful cities in Italy. That's how beautiful it was, with the museums and the art galleries and the monuments and the statues and just the beauty of the city itself. But unfortunately, that night, Dresden was also packed full of refugees from the east who were fleeing the Soviet army, which was only about 70 miles away. So we've got a city of roughly 600,000 people now almost doubled, or even further, more than doubled in capacity. In other words, well over a million people crammed into every nook and cranny in Dresden. Now, the Allies knew this. They knew all of this stuff. They had lots of ears on the ground, so to speak. So they knew that they were going to really take in a big, big harvest of death in this bombing raid on Dresden. And it did. First wave came in, just like at Hamburg. It came in with the high explosives and utterly destroyed this magnificent, broke, beautiful city, Dresden. It just was a shattered mess after this. After the bombers finally turned and went back toward England. And the scenario, the script was very similar to Hamburg. The people who had survived, yes, they came out of their holes after the raid and considered themselves lucky, but they were so busy trying to find a way to escape and trying to find loved ones and pets, things like this, that they were caught out in the open, just like in Hamburg when the next wave came in a couple of hours later. This would have been after midnight on February the 14th, 1 or 2 o'clock in the morning, and they dropped their incendiary bombs, the tens of thousands of small bombs that ignited on contact. And it created a terrific firestorm, just as at Hamburg, a firestorm that was fed by itself. In other words, a self-feeding type of fire in which the heat was so intense that it created tornadoes of fire, literally swirling wind of fire, fire that would actually suck people in off the street. And those people who weren't sucked in like autumn leaves into this inferno, they were stuck on their hands and knees in the tar, in the asphalt that was melting. I can go on about this. It's a terrible story, but I think people can imagine what the results were when the planes finally left that early morning. Anywhere between the first estimate of the number of people killed in this crime was 200,000. That was by the police chief 2 weeks after the bombing run. That's his estimate. That's how many bodies they found, 200,000 dead, that were either buried, more likely they were stacked up and simply burned, quite honestly, because there was so much to do in a city that's been utterly destroyed, a million some people. And but later, the Berlin bean counters, Berlin Germans are very efficient and organized people, and they actually list things like this to find out what the true effect was. They came in later, the Berlin bureaucrats, and they estimated that maybe as many as 400,000 died in this. And even the International Red Cross said it was certainly over 200,000. So we've got people
today. Tom, I hate to have to interrupt you. We've got to go to another break.
In Dresden, people today left it.
Tom, we got to go to a break. I don't know if you can hear the music. People, we'll be right back. When we come back, we're going to let Gene ask Tom a few questions about this. Let Gene tune in. Hang on, people. I know it's tough, but hang on.
Proclaiming liberty across the land. You're listening to Liberty News Radio. USA Radio News with John Hunt.
Democrats, this was supposed to be a moment to begin easing 3 years of built-up anxiety. Instead, the launch of the 2020 presidential primary has left the party deeply unsettled. Party leaders are still on edge over embarrassing technical issues that marred the Iowa caucuses, where there is still no official winner. Frontrunners Bernie Sanders and Pete Buttigieg were named in an effective tie. Sanders and Buttigieg face questions about their long-term political viability. Some supporters say the two leading women in the race, Senators Elizabeth Warren of Massachusetts and Amy Klobuchar of Minnesota, are raising alarms about persistent sexism. And Joe Biden, the national longtime frontrunner, finished a distant fourth. He's now facing a money crunch, a staff shakeup, and a looming challenge from Michael Bloomberg. The former New York City mayor isn't competing in the early states, but he's spending hundreds of millions of dollars in Super Tuesday and later contests. This is USA Radio News.
Here is some great news. If you missed the deadline to sign up for health insurance, or if you sign up for a plan that you're just not happy with, you still have a choice. It's called MediShare. It's the affordable alternative to health insurance, and it's worked beautifully for 25 years. They have more than 400,000 members now around the country. MediShare is a Christian healthcare sharing ministry, and over the years, members have shared over $3 billion of each other's medical bills, so they could help share your needs too. And best of all, you could save a lot of money with MediShare. The typical savings for a family is about $500 a month. Your savings could be more or less, but think about what you could do with that extra money every month. You're not stuck with a high-cost health plan. You can join MediShare anytime, so call them today and check it out. Here's the number to find out more, and there's no pressure. They are super easy to talk to. Call 833-34-BIBLE. That's 833-34-BIBLE. 833-34-BIBLE.
A 15th inmate has now died at a Mississippi prison in just over a month. The death is the fifth in a little more than a week and comes amid a string of violence inside prisons. Jesus Garcia was found unresponsive inside his cell at Wilkinson County Correctional Facility. He was serving a 20-year sentence for capital rape. Since December 29th, 15 inmates have died inside Mississippi prisons. Most of the deaths occurred at the troubled state penitentiary at Parchment. Two inmates have died by hanging, but many others were killed during violent outbursts that are gang-related.
The British government plans to announce new rules for the imprisonment of convicted terrorists after an Islamic extremist who was recently released from prison stabbed two people over the weekend in South London. Prime Minister Boris Johnson said the government will release their plans that will effectively stop the early release of any convicted extremist, double sentences for terrorism convictions, and the overhaul of conditions in which suspects can be released back to the community. This is USA Radio News.
Excuse me, Captain. I know this may sound silly, but can you fly?
Nope. Never had a lesson.
Okay, people, if you've been like me, I've just been mesmerized listening to this. This is just a horror story. We're going to give Tom's voice a break. You know, he has a little difficulty. He has this little throat thing. We all have some type of ailment. But I'm going to ask, and we're going to bring up, we'll bring Paul English in after a while, pretty soon. Paul English is the guy who did an audio book of what you're listening to, of Hellstorm. And before we leave tonight, we got to ask Tom for his website, how people can order this book and this audio book. But Gene, I'm going to ask you a question, my brother. Let me, Gene, I think I know what you'll say. What do you think would happen if the same type of hellstorm had hit Jesse Jackson called New York? He called it Heine Town. What if they hit New York, or God forbid, what if they hit Tel Aviv or Jerusalem with the same type of treatment, Gene? What do you think about that?
Oh, you'd never hear the end of that. It'd be another whole hoax thrown out there. And, you know, we would have relief agencies, and there'd be movies about it and docudramas, and this would be going on and on and on. But since the Germans lost the war, it's just swept under the rug. And I've had this argument with people that I know, and I've done a lot of research. I've read a lot of Tom's articles in Barnes Review, and I've read that book, Hellstorm, which is a hard read. It's tough to go through more than four or five pages at a time and not have to put that down. But it's something I think people need to know about. But I've had this argument with people, and they say, oh, no, that didn't happen. That didn't happen. The United States wouldn't do something like that. I said, yes, they would. And I point my finger and I said, and tell them, you know it happened because you're a Southerner and it happened to us. Now, why would you think that this happened to us in the South, and the Northern armies got real brave toward the end of the war, and that's when most of the destruction and the rape of women in the South and murder of civilians and murders of prisoners of war happened in the last 2 years of the war. Just like Tom said, they knew they were going to win. They knew there weren't going to be any consequences. So people like Sheridan and Sherman and Wilson and all of these people were just turned loose on the Southern civilians. And I said, it happened to us. Why do you think it wouldn't have happened to the Germans or the Japanese? And they kind of stunned, you know. And, well, how about the Titans? You think they're going to make it to the Super Bowl? You know, change the subject and go on. So, it's a scary thing to have the United States government turn loose on you and what they can do when they feel there's never going to be any repercussions against them. And while we're just taking a little bit break there for Tom, let him rest his voice, I want to put in another plug for the Barnes Review. Tom has had numerous articles in there. His books are listed in there. There's a whole page, TBR books from Tom Goodrich, that you can order and just give their website. It's BarnesReview, allonewordcom. And you know these books are accurate, that they offer for sale. You know they're accurate because Amazon won't touch it. And so if Amazon is backing out, you know they must be telling the truth. So you can order directly from thebarnesreview.com and go there, and then they have a toll-free number also that you can get in touch with them. So the Barnes Review, on the headline, across the front, it says, a journal of politically incorrect history. So, and it's a great publication. I've really enjoyed my subscription, and they cover all different phases of history in each issue. So it's not all just World War II or all war between the states, or they go from Egyptian times up to Afghanistan, the war in Afghanistan, and everything in between. And this last issue, Tom has an article in there called Mad as a Hatter about this guy Boston Corbett that supposedly shot John Wilkes Booth, or shot somebody that was supposed to be Booth, and we think that a lot of authors and historians think that Booth escaped, and they had some guy that just put in that barn and shot him and then took the body out and dumped it in the ocean so nobody could check it. So this guy, Boston Corbett, was just a religious fanatic and crazy as a March hare. So, but another great article by Thomas Goodrich. I highly recommend getting hold of that. So I'll get out of the way and let our premier guest go ahead and finish his story then.
Well, Gene, you could never be in the way. I'm going to add one quick comment, and we're going to bring, I think Tom is wanting us to bring, like I say, Tom's voice is kind of, I don't know how much longer Tom can go, but we also are going to bring Paul English in this minute and let him, he wants to play a clip. In fact, we want him to play a clip. I really appreciate Gene coming. Now, people, you know why I've loved Gene so much. He's an expert at this stuff. But, you know, I'm going to ask a quick question, we can bring in whenever Tom wants us to. We can bring Paul in because he, like I say, he did the audio book. But, you know, I'm going to ask you guys a rhetorical question probably. I think I already know the answer. But I think FDR was surrounded in the highest levels of government. He was surrounded by Jews. And you people know that Jews, they hated Germany. As a matter of fact, in the 1930s, they declared the American Jewry, world Jewry. I don't have the paper with me right now, but I had one around here somewhere. It appeared in the Barnes Review, where the international Jewry declared war on Germany way years before the actual shooting war started, somewhere around 1933. Okay.
That was
I'm glad you get back
headlines.
That up.
Hitler must die. That's the headline in the paper.
Why did they hate him so bad, Gene?
Because he was on to them. It's just the same reason they hate Trump. He's blown the whistle on the deep state and all the shenanigans that are going on in Washington, and that's why all these bureaucrats that were in his administration were turning on him. Well, the same thing happened in Germany. Hitler blew the whistle on the Rothschilds and their usury tactics. We call it loan sharking today, but they called it usury back then. The Jews controlled the media. They controlled the film industry. Germany had the top film industry in the world at that time. Hollywood at that time was just a little dusty town on the suburbs of Los Angeles. But Germany was the premier filmmaker at that time, and they controlled the film industry. They controlled the pornography industry. And so Hitler was trying to clean that out and say, look, you know, they're tearing this country, the Weimar Republic, they wrecked the Weimar Republic. And he knew that Germany would never rebound from the disaster of what had happened after World War One, as long as these people were controlling the destiny of Germany. And Hitler didn't want them killed. He didn't want them put in work camps. He never did use gas on them like they told us that happened. That's the whole hoax story. He was getting them out of Germany and sending them to Palestine, and then German government was paying for it. And they were causing so much trouble over there with the Palestinians that the British, who were running Palestine after World War One, refused to take any more of them. They tried sending them to America, and Roosevelt wouldn't take them. So Germany was stuck with the problem. But that's something they don't tell you about.
You know, guys, Gene, you're absolutely right. I have a book in my hand that Lee gave me. It's about 400 or 500 pages long. It's called The Transfer Agreement, The Dramatic Story of the Pact Between the Third Reich and Jewish Palestine. It's written by a Jew. The Jew's name is Edwin Black, and he backs up everything you said, Gene. That's a big no-no, a big taboo. The Jews, international Jewry, they hate to admit that they were in cahoots with the Nazis in Germany. They were paid to leave Germany. They were allowed to take all their wealth with them. Well, going back to you, Mr. Tom, do you want to carry on some more? Would you like to give your website, or would you like to? When do you want to bring Paul English in? I'm at your service.
Okay, Paul could probably add a whole lot to this conversation. In fact, Paul knows more about Dresden and perhaps even World War II than I do. And
okay, we'll get Sam to bring him in.
Yeah, Paul.
Okay,
Paul's
supposed to call in. Paul, I thought I was understanding that Paul was going to call us in on his Skype.
Okay, well, he will, I'm sure. Let's see. But anyway, Paul did the narration of the audiobook, Hellstorm. You know, it takes a little bit of energy and effort to read a book. Let's face it, to read, you've got to think, you've got to imagine. But Paul takes the work out of it by just simply narrating it. And he does an exquisite job. People tell me that the book is a great book. Well, I'm going to tell you what, The great book has a great voice, Paul English. He does an excellent job. And anybody interested in that can look up Hellstorm audiobook. Just look it up, and everything else will do its best. But they go for $20, and they're worth it, of course. But Paul knows a lot about this story. He's one of us, quite honestly. And, Dresden needs to be remembered. Needs to be remembered more than just once a year. It needs to be known every day of the year throughout the world. This was such a terrible crime committed, deliberate act, a cold-blooded act of murder. We're talking anywhere from 200 to 400,000 people. Some people have even taken us to 500,000 because that's how packed that city was that night, to be burned to the ground. People melted, actually melted. Bodies were never found. They were buried. And like I said, they were melted. They just simply went to Greece. And yet you hear very little about it, except for people who now insist that only maybe 25,000 people died in Dresden. They know that's a lie, and a damn lie when they say it, because they think if they can reduce the number of deaths, they reduce the crime level, the crime itself. And that's not so.
Hey, Tom, we got to go to a break now. We got to go to a break if you want to. If you're able to get in touch with your buddy, I was under impression he was going to call in on Skype. If you can, if we can't get him in the night, we'll try to get him on next week. But people, we've come right back, and this is one of the greatest interviews we've ever had. We'll be right back, people. Hang on to your seats.
The spirit of the American West is alive and well in Range Magazine, the award-winning quarterly devoted to the issues that affect the American West, its people, lifestyles, lands, and wildlife. The Loving Liberty Radio Network is proud to support the publisher's efforts to provide an active forum for solutions that preserve the vanishing American cowboy, farmer, and sheepherder. Each issue contains informative articles on life in the American West, along with breathtaking imagery, as well as the culture of the cowboy spirit in our day. Each issue of Range Magazine also features great gift ideas, like the 2020 Real Buckaroo Calendar and the book Tales from Out There. Order online from rangemagazine.com. Just click on the shopping cart. The Loving Liberty Radio Network salutes the spirit of the American West and those who are keeping it alive at Range Magazine. The Foundation for Moral Law is a nonprofit legal foundation committed to protecting our unalienable right to publicly acknowledge God. The Foundation for Moral Law exists to restore the knowledge of God in law and government, and to acknowledge and defend the truth that man is endowed with rights not by our fellow man, but by God. The foundation maintains a twofold focus. First, litigation within state and federal courts. Second, education, conducting seminars to teach the necessity and importance of acknowledging God in law and government. How can you help? Please make a tax-deductible contribution, allowing foundation attorneys to continue the fight. You may also purchase various foundation products as well at morallaw.org. Located in Montgomery, Alabama, the Foundation for Moral Law is a nonprofit, tax-exempt 501c3, founded by Judge Roy Moore. Please partner with us to achieve this important mission. morallaw.org.
I'd advise Mr. Trump to stop whining and go try to make his case to get votes.
The press has created a rigged system. They even want to try and rig the election.
Well, I tell you what, it helps in Ohio that we got Democrats in charge of the machines.
And poisoned the mind of so many of our voters.
At the polling booths, where so many cities are corrupt and voter fraud is all too common. And then they say, oh, there's no voter fraud in our country.
I come from Chicago. So I want to be honest. It's not as if it's just Republicans who have monkeyed around with elections in the past. Sometimes Democrats have too. You know, whenever people are in power, they have this tendency to try to, tilt things in their direction.
There's no vote.
You start whining before the game's even over. Whenever things are going badly for you and you lose, you start blaming somebody else. Then you don't have what it takes to be in this job.
Well, people, we're right back. Thank you so much for hanging on. We're going to introduce Mr. Paul. Mr. Paul, how are you doing tonight, fella?
I'm doing fine. It's quite late at night where I. Well, not really. It's quarter to midnight here, but it's fine. It's good. I've just been tuning in and catching. There was a little bit of clumsiness about how to connect to you. I didn't quite know what the protocol was, if that's the right word. But here I am. Good to be with you guys.
Well, it's great to be with you. We fly by the seat of our pants here a lot. We do a lot of things. Me and Sam do a lot of things that aren't normally done on radio. We run guests in and out, co-host in and out. We're all soldiers here. My great, the one and only Gene Andrews, he's an expert. I won't go over his whole bio because we're for lack of time, but he's going to be pretty much running the show tonight. Tom, we had to let Tom go because of logistics, so to speak, with the telephone lines and things. But Tom told me that you had some film, that you had some clips that you wanted to play from the audiobook Hellstorm. Is that true?
Sure. We can do that. I mean, I think Tom may have mentioned the website where the book is. It's I'll say it again. It's hellstormaudiobook.com to make it, as obvious as possible. And at the bottom of that site, I mean, I can play one of them for you right now. That's not a problem. But there are three little clips that have just been picked, at random almost from out of the whole, because it's 14 hours long is the book, So, which bit do you pick? It's kind of funny because when you take a little bit out, it's isolated. But sure, I can play you a couple of minutes from one of those tracks. And if anybody wants to hear the other two that we don't play, if they just head over there, they can sort of, get a sampler. Do you want me to do that? Is that what you want me to do?
Well, I'll tell you what, I'm going to go to Gene. Gene, what
Absolutely.
Do you want to do, fella?
Yes, sir. We are so honored to have Mr. English on and Tom Gruders. I tell you the truth, I feel like a teenage garage band opening for the Doors and the Rolling Stones right here tonight. So I'm going to get out of the way and let the top of the line people have the rest of the show. So, Mr. English, we're glad certainly to have you, sir, and you play whatever you need to play, and we're
looking forward to it. All right, well, look, I was asked to play, so here we go. I'll just play this. I have no idea which this one is, but here we go, right? I think this should come through. Let me just check my thing at this end. You'll get this. Here we go.
We'll like it. Rock and roll.
It was those very same soldiers who had fought with such ruthless savagery during the war and whose government had not even been a signatory to the Geneva Convention that now often exhibited most kindness and compassion to the fallen foe. Undoubtedly, these battle-hardened Soviet shock troops had seen far too much blood and death during the past 4 years to thirst for more. Panzer Commander, Colonel Hans von Luck. So there we stood with our hands up. From all sides, the Russians came at us with their Tommy guns at the ready. I saw to my dismay that they were Mongolians, whose slit eyes revealed hatred, curiosity, and greed. As they tried to snatch away my watch and Knight's Cross, a young officer suddenly intervened. Stop. Don't touch him. He's a Geroi, hero, a man to respect. I looked at him and just said, Spasivo, thank you. This correct young Russian officer took us at once to the nearest regimental command post, where he handed us over to a colonel of the tank corps. It turned out before long that it had been his tank regiment on which we had inflicted such heavy losses at Lauban. This burly man, who made such a brutal first impression, slapped his thigh and laughed. You see? He cried. That's poetic justice. You shot up my tanks and forced us to retreat. Now, in recompense, I have you as my prisoner. He fetched two glasses and, in Russian style, filled them to the brim with vodka, so that together we would drain them with one swallow. In numerous other instances, surprised lancers in the East were treated correctly, given food, clothing, cigarettes, and accorded prisoner of war status. Left to the Russian soldiers themselves, there would have been no gulags, no slavery, and no Siberia for their defeated enemy. It was enough for the average Ivan to have simply survived. So there you go. Yeah, that's a little two-minute clip. That's one of the three that's there.
And Mr. Goodrich was making a point earlier on, talking about how the atrocities that were committed by the Allies in Hamburg, Dresden, and then dropping the atomic bombs. But those of us that have studied that history know that the Americans inflicted a lot more casualties with incendiary bombing of Japan for almost a year before the atomic bombs were even dropped. Once they got out of the Marianas and captured Iwo Jima, they can use that as a launching pad for these raids against Japan with incendiary bombs. So it seems like they use the same tactic against Germany in Hamburg and Dresden and other cities around Germany as they did against some of the major cities in Japan with using these incendiary bombs. I don't want to interfere with your part of the program. If you'd go ahead and play whatever clip of the clip that you would like for us to hear, please, sir.
No, I mean, well, we could do. I mean, I think we're kind of, we've only got a few minutes, don't we, or something to run, and you could fill it with clips. But I mean, what I would say is that, you know, anybody listening, if they want to pick up the other two clips, they're over there. I can't remember what they are. I'm sorry. I know it sounds a little bit vague. It's over a year since I recorded it, and you know what it's like. The thing is, as well, as you mentioned earlier, I think, Gene, it's quite an exhaustive book. I've mentioned this to Tom a lot of times, so many times I don't mention him anymore. But it's exhausting to read, and it ought to be. It took a lot of energy to read it through. And to be quite honest, I think, you know, when you were talking about reading just a few pages and going for a walk, that's what I did. I actually read it, it's nearly 6 years ago now, 2014 I read it. And at the time, I made contact with Tom. I don't know quite how I managed to do that, but I did. And he kindly, when he sent me the book, it was one of the last copies that he had from his own cache, as it were, or stash. He put a little note in there saying, good luck with the radio stuff. And a few years later, of course, I end up doing the narration for him because I don't think I badgered him to do it, but I just called him up and said, hey, don't you think somebody ought to do this? He said, do you want to have a go? I said, sure, go on, let me have a go. So I did.
Well, that's great.
I haven't done another one since, but it's a heavy book. I mean, it's heavy. There's no getting out of this. It's just heavy. So it's to be taken in small doses, you know, over a few weeks. I wouldn't suggest you sit down and plow through it. It's exhausting to the soul.
It's so depressing.
It ought to be. Yeah.
To read what happened to innocent people. Well,
I have a couple of questions for Paul, for you and Gene. I would like to bring you on again since we're running low on time. Would you be willing to come on again maybe next week, the first hour? I don't know if Gene, we can get together. I'll try to figure out how to get to you. I'd like to bring you and Gene on again. And I'd like to tell your story, get you to tell the story of the book, because Tom said that you're probably more expert than him. My second question
he's such a gent, is Tom, and he's full of it. He's he's so kind. He is. He's such a decent chap. I'm going to have to give him a good smack when I see him, if we ever do get together, because he's gracious to the point of making me blush. It's ridiculous, but he's a wonderful guy. I wouldn't say that this is not a sort of competition, is it? What Tom did, fascination with was his research process. I remember him telling me that, you guys would know better than me because it's your neck of the woods, but there are German clubs or were German clubs in the States. And that's where some of the survivors, very old and long in the tooth, spoke to him. And this is where that immediacy and direct energy of the book comes from, because it's really one page after another, personal testimony of people who were immersed in this hell. And that's what strikes you in the solar plexus as you read it. You're taken there with these people and you're going, I'm glad I was not there.
Oh, yeah.
Well, this is Dresden month for us, the whole month of Dresden. But before we run out of time, I definitely would like to get you back. We need to continue this because we are celebrating Dresden month.
And Dresden time comes around so fast, doesn't it? I mean, I'm not trying to make light of it, but it only seems like the other day that we were doing this. So I'd be happy to come back. That'd be fine.
Great. I have one more question. You made a salient point. You said that the Russian troops were gracious. They treated the German troops as warrior soldiers, brother warriors. Who was it? This is a rhetorical question to you and Gene. Who was responsible for the hellish treatment of the, you know, all of the women in Germany were raped. They had giant concentration camps. They starved the German soldiers. Who was behind that, if not the Russian soldiers?
Eisenhower. I'll tell you who that was. Eisenhower was doing that.
And you've got the great Russian Jewish propagandist, Ehrenberg, whose invective in his writing is, I would say, probably the primary cause for the sort of raping, situation. All the troops from all the allied nations were involved in that.
Yeah.
But the Mongolian hordes are, without a doubt, you know, top of the list, if this is the way we're supposed to express it. And so there's a part in the book I remember where a village is, you know, they're kind of dubious. They've heard these terrible stories, but they don't think they could possibly be true. And the first wave of Russian troops come through, and these are basically white guys. They're us.
Well, Paul,
and I tell them you need to get out of here. I can hear the music.
We're totally out to hey, well, please call me and my number. Tom has my number. I'm going to set another show up with you and Gene and Tom because, like I said, this is Dresden Month. We'll do this every week if you want to. But please call. Get in touch with me. You can get in touch with me through Tom. Thank you so much, Paul. Thank you, Tom. And thank you so much, Gene. If you said you feel like a teenager with an opening rock band, imagine how I feel because you're eminently more qualified than I am. Thank you guys for coming on. My blood was just boiling tonight. It just, I don't know what to say. It was so wonderful. People, you heard one of the greatest interviews, one of the greatest shows we've had here on Blood River Radio. We've been so blessed to have these wonderful guys. We had Tom and Paul and Gene and Sam run the whole thing. God bless you. Please pray for us, and we'll see you, God willing, same time, same place next week. It'll be the 15th of February. Good night, people.